I'm Shelley Palmer.
I'm Ross Martin.
And you're listening to Think About This.
Today, we get deep into the business of Twitter with Stacey Monero, Global Head of Twitter Art House, and Sarah Personette, VP of Global Client Solutions at Twitter.
Plus, how to defend yourself from COVID-19 and more.
So welcome to Think About This.
The more you listen, the less you know. Oh, come on.
Shelley, how was your recent plane ride? Because apparently on social media, it looks like you had an eventful ride.
Well, you know what? Every plane ride is eventful. And my favorite kind of plane ride is the ones where I'm still here to talk about them afterwards. But I had this crazy experience. You know, the coronavirus scare is real and people have died and it's horrifying. And everybody, I think, is rightfully very concerned. So I'm on this airplane and about a half a dozen people right around me are wearing medical masks.
To protect themselves or protect you?
Well, so that is the big question. So then I noticed that they would take the masks off to drink or eat, and that they were eating almost every one of them was eating something that the flight attendant had, given them.
Well, how are they supposed to eat? You just think they shouldn't eat?
I was trying to understand, you're wearing a mask to protect you. So what exactly do you think is, if you take the mask off, you are no longer protected? So
yeah, all of a sudden the virus rushes in.
Right. So, of course, I got home and you know me. The first thing I did was I got on the phone and I called a friend of mine at the CDC. And I said, hey, I was just on a plane. And, I just told the whole story. She says to me, well, let me take you through it. First of all, the mask has nothing to do with anything you think it has to do with. You get coronavirus one of two ways, we think, and she underlined she thinks. Person-to-person contact, which means you're within about 6 feet of somebody and droplets get to you. So they sneeze or cough or they touch you and there's a virus on their hands. And then you touch your face and you do that apparently hundreds of times a day without knowing it. And that's one way to get it. The other way is that the virus itself, they believe, like other coronaviruses in the past, can live on a hard surface for roughly 2.5 hours. So this is what she told me. She said the mask protects you if someone sneezes around you. The droplets will not get through the mask. So if you happen to have the mask off and someone coughs or sneezes, you're in serious trouble because the whole masking didn't work. If you are infected, that mask will protect others because you're breathing out through it most of the time. And if you cough or sneeze into it, it probably can catch the virus and the particulate. The number one thing she told me that I think everybody should know, hand sanitizers, like the Purell that everybody's using, aren't strong enough.
What? Really?
Yeah. So they don't contain enough alcohol to kill this thing. So what she said to me is you got to wash your hands with soap and water and at least 30 seconds worth. And that – they know that will work. But a splash of like Purell or whatever that stuff
not
is.
Not enough.
Not enough. And I said to her, but you see people like handing that out everywhere. Everyone's using it thinking that they're safe. She said, yeah, that's absolutely mythology. And so if you go to the CDC.gov website, you'll get good confirmation of this. That's the key takeaway, that Purell and hand sanitizers like it. I'm not calling out Purell as being good or bad. The non-industrial strength versions of that stuff. And I said, well, what about industrial strength versions? And she says – to me, it would dry out. Like if it had enough alcohol to kill the virus, it would dry your hands out to the point where you couldn't use it that often. Go wash your hands and do it often. So that's how you prevent the coronavirus, soap and water. Careful of the hand sanitizers and the mask thing. Understand what you're doing. There's special kinds of masks you have to wear that are actually valuable and others that are just not going to work at all. So try not to use the ones that don't work at all. And all that stuff's online. And I'm not the authority on it, but I certainly had a plane ride to remember and
CDC.com/thinkaboutthis.
CDC.gov. That's where you go. So Ross, when I think of Twitter, I don't really think of super creative like images and videos.
Oh, I do. I think people are messing with the platform in the most creative ways. I think it's incredible. Like, I don't know. I mean, maybe not. Maybe you're thinking that's happening more on Instagram.
Well, when I think of Instagram, I certainly think of pictures, great pictures, because it's the best picture of the day every day, right?
That's
true. You know, everybody puts their best thing up. And Facebook stories and Instagram stories are a thing now, and TikTok is a thing. Like, I love when you dance on TikTok. I think that video is creative and awesome to me. But I don't think of Twitter as a place like I would see Ross doing renegade dance.
Stacey Monero, who we're going to have on the show in a minute, her job is to literally work with brands to make better creative use of the Twitter platform.
And I think that's really where there's a lot of room for improvement, especially at the Shelley Palmer brand, which, I mean, I definitely need.
And you need Stacey.
We need Stacey.
Let's bring her in.
Let's bring her in. It's Stacey.
Woo!
Stacey. Hey, guys. Good morning.
Welcome.
What did you get yourself into by coming on our show?
I don't know. I love the unpredictable.
Well, that's the fact is, like, I think that most people don't even realize that human beings work at Twitter. There's quite a few of you there.
Yes.
It's not like some big machine that just works. There's people doing stuff. What do you do at Twitter?
So at Twitter, I oversee a team called Art House. And Art House is our in-house studio focused on developing content for brands. And so we do that a couple different ways. We connect brands with artists and influencers to develop content for the feed. We have in-house editing, so we do optimization and post-production. And then we also help brands go live with their own event or experience. You can actually live stream a conference or a musical concert or any type of event you can imagine.
Yeah, so it raises all these questions about what Twitter actually is.
Yes.
Because originally we thought it was a social network, but now you're talking about Twitter as a media company.
I wouldn't go as far as being a media company because we're not necessarily producing original content. We are enabling people to distribute the content, to have these shared experiences, to drive conversation. In some ways, it looks like a media company, but we still feel like we're a discovery platform and a vehicle to communicate to people in authentic ways.
So you're in a battle for attention versus the other social networks. And everybody on your platform is also in a battle for attention.
Yeah.
How do you get attention on Twitter?
Optimize what you have, design for the feed,
okay,
and then create conversation.
Okay, that's
and design participation. So you're inviting people to take part or be involved in something. Couple examples. So Verizon had a campaign called All Our Thanks, which was celebrating first responders as the engine of recovery efforts. So you had all these natural disasters, everybody can relate to a first responder. So if you use that hashtag, it was celebrating and spotlighting first responders, but you could also make a donation to the Red Cross for those recovery efforts. So that made people feel like they were connected to something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Another example, this is just a little more CPG focused, is Unilever, our friends at Unilever. Justin Bieber was tweeting about the popsicle and how the double popsicle had gone away.
Yeah.
And it was kind of this moment of nostalgia and he was hoping it would come back.
I think he's right.
He's right.
We needed it to come back.
Right.
And then what happened when he did that?
When he did that, Unilever rallied people to retweet his tweet to unlock the double pop and to bring back the double. And so it was basically a rally and reward type approach where the consumers actually brought it back to market.
So Stacey,
yeah,
I got to know, who is best practices on feed first content?
Okay. A brand I have a content crush on is Adidas.
Oh, I do too.
The way they tap into the cultural zeitgeist is impressive, but the content they create is so compelling. So we've worked on a bunch of campaigns with them where they tap into creators, artists, animators, illustrators.
Athletes.
Yes, but for some of their sneaker drops like Ultra Boost, they actually want to tap into the sneaker culture by using artists that are undiscovered.
Right.
So these are like 3D designers, illustrators, animators that develop this really eye-popping content you can't scroll past. And they use this collective of creators to bring that campaign to market. And it's just something that's so engaging and so share-worthy that it's just a really effective way for them to bring that message to market. So we have this idea around putting fans in the driver's seat. And so we started our content partnership play with just clips, like live clips that you could watch and enjoy and share. But we're starting to do more participation-based stuff. So we launched something called the VMA StanCam. So during the MTV Video Music Awards, you could actually select which camera would go on which celebrity.
Right. Yeah, you sort of had control of the show.
Exactly.
Through Twitter.
So you're putting control into the hands of the fans. And they get to select which view they see. Same thing with the NBA. We launched something called the ISO Cam where you could follow a player.
That's really
during
cool.
the second half of the game. So we're starting to do more of that. We've got something called Twitter Hitter with the MLB.
I love that.
Where you can actually follow a certain player at bat.
Has that launched yet?
Yeah, it launched this summer.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So that's cool. That's super
just
cool.
Just thinking about different ways to amplify sponsorship versus
The way we're going to amplify sponsorship, Stacey, is we're going to conscript you to help us make think about this a way better Twitter handle.
Yeah.
That's way followed by way more people.
Challenge accepted.
Thank you so very much for
thanks,
being here.
Thanks, guys. It was fun to chat.
So Stacey was great. New hope for
awesome.
All creators. So that was fun.
Yeah, super fun.
Now it's going to get a little more intense.
Super intense.
Because we're about to bring in here Sarah Personet.
Yeah, she's the VP of Global Client Solutions at Twitter. Serious business leader in a time when we need serious business leadership.
So friend, and deeply respect her.
Absolutely.
But we do have an obligation to our listeners here to not take it easy on Sarah.
Nope. So when we come back, you, Ross, are going to hold her feet to the fire and I'm going to cheer and help.
Not at first. We'll be nice at first and then we'll kind of get into it as soon as we get back.
Stay tuned. Sarah Personet is the Global Vice President of Twitter Client Solutions, Ross, and she's here with us.
But she could be the Executive Vice President of Known if she wants.
Yeah, she could actually be anything because she's literally one of the smartest human beings I've ever met.
All right, well, let's bring her in
Let's bring her in here.
Hey, Sarah, come on in.
Hey, guys, good to be here.
Hey, welcome. So what is the mission of Twitter?
So the mission of Twitter is to serve the public conversation. And essentially what that means is that we are an open, public, real-time interest graph. And so you don't come to Twitter to follow your friends or to follow family. You come to Twitter to be able to follow people that are experts in the topics and the subject matters that you care about, and that ultimately these inform you in a way that keep you interested, keep you engaged, keep you educated on the subjects that matter to you. So for me, like, whether it's women's issues, whether it's I love fashion, whether it's related to politics, that's sort of what makes up my feed. And it's an aggregate of publishers, experts like yourself, also like individuals.
Wait, when you said experts like yourself, why were you looking at Shelly for that one?
I'm looking at both of
you.
No offense.
She was looking at
you. She was looking at
you. Yeah, I was. It's a true statement.
It's cool. And by the way, she's right.
Okay. That's fact-checking.
You know, Sarah, in all fairness, I think that probably is the mission of Twitter. The reality of the internet and Twitter too is that while I do get all that stuff, and I do, you know, Twitter evolved as we all evolved, right? Started kind of like DMing everybody. And I still use DM an awful lot. It's just an easy way to get to people, and everybody I know basically has a Twitter account. But it evolved, right? And you get a news feed, and my Twitter news feed has the Commander and Tweet and a few others in there that are, you know, you just have to have because you want to know what's happening when it's happening. But also, there are a fair number of bots and crazy things happening, and you got to really work hard to filter that out. So the free and open part is really confused by the very free and open part, right? You've got two worlds colliding. What are you guys doing about that?
So a few things. Let me zoom out first and say, if you went back 13 years ago, the concept that makes Twitter so powerful today, which is that it is fully public, right? That everything that you put on the platform is fully available for anyone to see, was a challenge back then, whereas now it's actually a part of our superpower that in being so public, we actually allow for variations and variances of opinion to display themselves on the platform and to be able to securely.
That's not what happens. You have bots and you have trolls and people howl at the moon, and minds aren't changed in 240 characters. You've got the extreme sides. The more extreme it is, the more likely it is to engender comments. And I can write a strategy to win a Twitter war really easily, not to come at you too hard. But I want to win a Twitter war, I take a very subtle concept. I make it binary. I make it us against them. And I take the unpopular side. I will win the Twitter war with that strategy every single time. Now, it's conflict of interest, right? No conflict, no interest. That's an easy game to play. So
I would appreciate that if we didn't believe and didn't very much publicly say that our number one priority is to deliver health on the platform and to create a safe and secure experience where you can have differing opinions is a hard challenge, but it's one that we started tackling a few years ago by minimizing all of the abuse on the platform, by giving more consumer controls, and I can give examples of that, by proactively taking down spammy accounts and spammy behavior on the platform. So we actually have year over year, if you went 2017 to 2018, we saw a 50% reduction in abusive reports. If you went 2018 to 2019, we saw another 50% off of that 50% reduction. Does it mean that we are perfect? No. And when I get asked the question, will there ever be another number one priority? Health will always be the number one priority for us because people are going to be smart.
bots are going to be even smarter.
Sure.
And so we need to make sure that in the effort to create a safe and secure environment for people to be able to feel like they can share their perspectives, have that binary approach to any topic that matters to them, you have to also feel like you yourself can control that experience and control that the conversational thread that you own. So we've introduced things like author-moderated replies, where you as the author owner, you might start a conversation around 5G. And you have people coming at you that might be passionate in their perspectives and might disagree with you,
right,
but it's still a healthy conversation. Yeah. Then out of nowhere, you see someone blow up your conversation with something about your family that's orthogonal to everything right that you're talking about. And you're like, this wasn't the intention of the conversation that I was trying to drive around 5G. And you actually now have the ability to minimize that tweet. So basically collapse it and drop it to the bottom of your feed. Now, it is not, if it doesn't violate our policies, right, it is not deleted from the platform, because there is also something in serving the public interest that we want to make sure we're not curating the platform, but we are giving you the ability to understand and control the experience that you want to have if you are the owner.
It's a fascinating approach, because I'd never want to see voices silenced if they're respectful voices in, yes, a Socratic conversation. You have a thesis, 5G is good for humanity. Someone says, no, it isn't. It, you know, has potential health risks. And you want to go at that like civil human beings, state your case, and then people poke holes in it. That is a fabulous conversation I'll have every day with, and I do every, yeah, day. But when someone then says, you know, you're a commie pinko, this, that, that, and, you know, and you're that stuff, it's like, come on, guys, really?
Yeah.
We're talking about something else. I don't want to get into that. So the way I like this talk about all of this is it's always open season on ideas and never open season on people.
Love
Unfortunately,
that.
People don't comport themselves that way on Twitter all, yeah, the time. So I do like that feature. What do you think about the fact that Twitter itself is one of the most powerful information weapons that exists today? And what do you think is Twitter's responsibility about that?
Mm. I would say it's one of the most powerful information sources, not weapon, because I think that that would entail that you're using it for evil versus good. And going back to the value system, both Jack and the management team has the utmost integrity. And I talk about this pretty often. I'm like, when a company breaks the integrity contract with me, I have no problem leaving.
Right.
It's like no problem at all. And I think as a result, when you've built something as powerful as Twitter is today, it's very important that the people that lead and manage that company have a very core value system that helps to do what is good in the world and helps to try to achieve that versus to weaponize that type of platform. The role that we play, I think if you just like, if I zoom out for a moment, less as a Twitter employee and more of like a student of the industry and looking at social media as a whole, if you went back 13 years ago, 10 years ago, there was this drumbeat in the tech space that was like, we are tech companies. We are not publishers. We don't have an opinion or a perspective.
Right.
And as a result, we don't have a duty to the people on the platform, the users on the platform, society, civility, so on and so forth. And I think there has been a massive evolution in the time that I've been in the industry around a people standing up and saying, we actually require you, platform A, B, or C, to take a stance and have responsibility and ownership in this world where like you are squarely a firm part of who we are in our day-to-day life. Like platforms play a very strong role. I mean, we want to be a daily utility as Twitter, and we see people coming to the platform every single day. So we have a daily responsibility to deliver on that relationship with users. So with that, I think this is where on the Twitter side, I think we have risen to the challenge. We haven't fixed it perfectly, but we have risen to the challenge of trying to create that safe and secure environment and trying to say that health is our number one priority in trying to give more conversational controls to people. And in taking responsibility for those things, we're saying that we actually do need to potentially evolve that we're not just a tech platform, so but that we're one that people are on each and every day.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah. Facebook is in the identity business. LinkedIn is in the identity business. You know exactly who everybody is. They have your credit card.
Yeah.
Twitter is in the anonymity business, and I am anonymous. And therefore, while I'm verified, Ross, I think you're verified. You look like a verified guy to me. Yeah, Ross is pretty verified. And I know Sarah's verified. But a lot of people aren't, and certainly the bots aren't. And so you don't know what you're dealing with. Is there a responsibility that Twitter has to actually know who's who? And why don't you at this point?
So I think there are good and bad aspects to being identity-based. The good aspect is that if you know the person's name, you would believe that would lead you to believe that they are going to act with more civility than those that are not. That also means, though, that you are in pursuit as an identity-based platform of as much information about that person as possible, which can be good in delivering a more personalized experience, can also be bad if the data and the information is not used in the best way possible.
Well, every guest we have on here is incredibly well media trained. That's probably the best pivot I've ever seen.
Ever.
She literally, in the nicest way possible, just completely attacked competitors who may or may not be using our personal information for nefarious purposes and used that to separate Twitter and actually not just defend but champion its anonymity. I've never seen anyone do what she just did. That is a rhetorical device she just employed on us.
By the way, Sarah is a genius, which is why she works at Twitter. Which is
damn, that was good.
You know, and an orator of that quality is very rare.
Wow.
We love you.
She has been the COO of Refinery. She was the president of Universal McCann. She was the global VP of business solutions.
Now you
marketing,
know why.
Marketing of global business marketing at Facebook. Man, does she know what she's talking about?
I was going to say, that wasn't intentional nor a device. It was just an observation.
No. Okay. Then she just deflects it like that. Yeah. You see what she's doing here?
It's fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about the algorithms at Twitter and the machine learning tools that you guys are using. What's the strategy behind the way you guys are modeling and how are you approaching this? I mean, it's an incredible problem from a scientific perspective or a mathematical perspective. I'm just wondering, what's the theory or the thesis you guys are trying to prove or disprove when it comes to how you're modeling the feed itself?
I am not an algo expert.
I understand.
So that is.
But this is really a business question. It's not so much the science question. I know how hard it is. The question is what, but they have to have a North Star. What is the North Star of this algorithm or set of algorithms?
What I can answer and that I think is important to this is probably twofold. The first one is the way that we think about the platform as an interest graph. And I mentioned that earlier before. You are increasingly seeing us build products that actually deliver to you interest, topics, subjects, subject matter that you care about. And so we reintroduced lists and we just introduced topics within the last few months. And these are probably like tangible examples of what it means to better curate through algorithmic capabilities the things that matter to you or we believe matter to you based on the signals that we're receiving. So if you follow first let me zoom out and just describe for you what topics and what lists are. For topics, these are actually topics that you care about that are curated by us. And by curated, I mean it literally is a set of handles from publishers, from experts.
Yeah, I went and I picked out a whole bunch last week, and it's fascinating who and what I'm following in my feed now, and I like it much better. It is way more curated than what was going on before. So good job there. That was. Have you done that yet, Ross?
For sure, and it's getting me. It's nailing me. I think you know you're easy to get because you send so many signals. And they're so consistent. People know.
Well, I'm sorry, Ross.
No, it's fine. I think human beings and algorithms understand Shelley Palmer. And also your wife.
That's the quote of this podcast. Human beings. Headline. On the list side, those are basically a list that's curated by you. So you might be, I mean, I look at Shelley and certainly I look at you as well. And you are an expert. Didn't mean to say before that you weren't an expert on a variety of different topics.
Not on AI. Keep going.
But I might follow Shelley for all the different things that he is an expert on and want to actually follow what he is following. So he now can DM me. This is something we're experimenting with, but he can DM me his list on AI or his list on 5G or his list on a series of other topics that might be related to a variety of different subject matters. And or I myself might care about women's issues. And so the list that I've created is a series of handles from UN Women to Lauren Leader Chavez to All In Together to She Runs It, right?
I'm just so glad you didn't look at mine before you came in here because I knew I would have been.
It's not that highbrow.
Let's just say it's a mix of highbrow and like Blake Lively
and sneaker culture
and Blake Lively though.
Yeah, that's Blake, Lively. Blake is pretty awesome.
She's very smart.
What you're seeing there is self curation in addition to curation from the platform. And I think that's the ultimate drive and mission to make sure that we're highly relevant to you. And again, playing off of that daily utility piece that you're coming in as soon as you hit the feed, it's information and content that you can use that makes you smarter on a topic that you care about and or allows you to fluidly and flexibly and easily get into a conversation with other subject matter experts that you want to engage in that topic.
Can we talk about brands for a second? Because part of your job is to make people spend more money on Twitter, right?
Part of my job is to service our customers and both large and small brands on the platform alike.
Oh, my God.
You're doomed, Ross. So far out of your league. It's unbelievable. But try. Keep trying. Maybe you'll get there.
All right. Twitter is an old new media company.
Nice.
It's born in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
In 2020, it occurs to me that most brands still have not figured out how to get the most from this platform.
I agree with that.
If they had 17 months ago, no need to bring in Top Gun Sarah Personette. And instead they did, they realized, there's so much more value to create for our brand partners on Twitter. Let's get Sarah. So agree or disagree, in 2020, brands are making the most of Twitter.
Agree that brands are leaning into this platform in a way that I think we've never seen in the probably 15 years that social media has existed. That's really cool to see. Like, it's really special. Wendy's actually yesterday just launched Wendy's Breakfast. The reason they use this platform to launch is because the audience, and I think it is because of the interests and the events and the topics and the cultural relevance that Twitter plays in the world today, means that when you launch on this platform, you actually are heard, you are recognized as a brand that they care about, and that ultimately you want to take action. Similarly, when Wendy's launched the spicy nuggets back in like end of July, early August, there was a run on that particular restaurant in order to be able to participate in the spicy nugget. And that cultural phenomenon is something that we see consistently on the platform today. I think we have great advertising products on the brand side. Upper funnel, we are exceptional. On the lower funnel side, we're still evolving. We've been very public about this. We rebuilt our tech stack in an effort to basically solve for the problem around that we have with performance advertising.
You might want to explain the upper funnel and the lower funnel to our listeners who don't know what that means.
Absolutely. So there is a marketing, something called a marketing funnel, which at the top of that funnel is where you are trying to drive awareness of your brand, your product, your creative message. And as you move down the steps of that funnel, you go from awareness to interest to ultimately conversion, and conversion being purchase. So you might actually go and purchase that product or that service, or might take an action such as downloading an application or walking into a car dealer in order to take a car off the lot.
For those of you who are keeping score or believe this is school, it's IDA is the acronym. Awareness, interest, desire, action. That's how you think about a purchase funnel, IDA. But it's like Roy G. Biv for ad marketers.
Yeah, I like that.
This is the hardest thing for me to understand about marketing on Twitter. conversion should be, in my opinion, the easiest thing to do.
Why are you having lower funnel problems?
That's the easy part to me, transactional.
So it's a very good question. I think there is, on the awareness side, we are a brand building platform and have built a business based on being a brand building platform.
I don't think a lot of people would say that.
Of course, I agree.
No, intuitively, I don't think you would think that they're better at awareness than transactions. Without knowing, without seeing the data, you would assume that it's in front of you, press a button, it's happening. The awareness thing, that you would think that there would be average or because there's so much noise. But you guys actually are a very good awareness platform. I can attest to that.
Absolutely. From the numbers. Driving both brand awareness as well as driving cultural relevancy in a world today where there is so much noise on every single platform, in every single medium and every single channel – we actually have found that the number three reason you would ever buy a product is because it's culturally relevant today, that it breaks through, it connects with what's happening in the world. There's no greater platform to connect with what's happening in the world than Twitter. I mean, because it is real time, because it's public, because events and experiences are breaking first on the platform, this is where you go. And when you're a brand, you want to connect to those things, which is why we are great at building brands, at being able to tug on the heartstrings and the emotions of consumers when they're able to interact with those brands in a real and authentic way. As you move down the purchase funnel to your question of like, man, that seems like that's a really easy thing to solve. We started to solve that with our mobile app promotion and mobile app engagement business, but we have a long ways to go in terms of really offering like one-stop, one-click buying, which I think is like shortened with this evolution to a mobile-first world. There is a need and a requirement for consumers to have like a very shortened path to purchase. And that's the piece that we're also in the process of cracking.
Here's what Sarah will not do on this podcast. She will not say who the real problem is.
Nope.
Facebook, Twitter, and Google have done incredible things to develop products and services that allow you to use advanced segmentation tools and targeting to reach the right consumers in the right way, at the right time, in the right place, and to prevent you from reaching the consumers you don't want to reach.
Mm-hmm.
And guess who hasn't kept up? Not the brands, the very agencies that she used to work for.
Yep.
The holding companies that are holding us all back. The agencies that have taken agency from the brands they work for instead of giving them agency.
I will very respectfully disagree with
She will never agree with that because they are the ones who she has to sell to.
Absolutely not. That is no. And I fundamentally believe that agencies are here to stay, that they will always be around, and that they add value to the equation. There is
several jabs from Sarah Personette. But Ross's head is actually just slightly out of the way. Now Ross is going to counterpunch. Here it comes.
We totally agree. Agencies are critical to the success of their brand clients. Not the agencies that are still living in the age of 30 years ago.
He doesn't know it's a damn show. He thinks it's a damn fight.
Not those that haven't evolved to meet the standards of marketing today. Ooh. And not those who are failing to recognize and utilize the very tools
that
Sarah and her team have developed.
Oh my goodness, WPP is knocked out. What are we waiting for?
So
they're not keeping up
with
you.
That evolution of both agencies and clients and the platforms are required. We spent the first X amount of minutes of this podcast talking about the evolution of our platform and of the social media industry or the industry as a whole. There are standards that we need to keep up with. There are standards that agencies need to keep up with, and there are standards that clients need to keep up with. This is the reason it's an ecosystem and the reason why business is the most personal thing ever, because there are people behind all of these entities. And the more that we can share and the more that we realize that if we do this together, we actually can, the 22-year-old me was in awe of the art and science of media and technology today and what could happen when you brought brands and people more closely together.
But you don't need
an agency. And I believe that's still
possible. We're agreeing, Shelley.
You guys totally agree.
But all she's not doing is taking credit for being so far ahead of her agency partners. The reason we have this episode, you and Stacey Monero on this episode, which we are dedicating entirely to Twitter, is we're sitting here lauding lauding the technology, the creativity, and innovation that is going on your platform, the tools that you and your team of 1,000 people have built to make it possible for brands to reach the right consumers in the right way.
Leverage that platform.
Yet we continue to see agencies that have, I just don't think they're working hard enough to understand even what you've built. It's like you got to spend more money to teach them how to actually use your platform or something. And we're not saying different things. You and I completely agree.
I think agencies, every single agency lead that I speak to around the world is very invested in their talent, is very invested in getting things like Flight School, which is our training program in 11 plus languages around the world.
You get a bird and you fly.
There's a lot of bird references in our branding.
It's good.
I think that they are very much dedicated to supporting their talent and also trying to sustain retention in their organizations today. There is a reality around competition that exists in the industry today, and it's a fight for the best talent and the fight to move fast and the fight to be relevant as
an
industry and also as a brand.
But in practice, Sarah, Twitter, because it's real time, is dispassionate and instant, just like the rest of the internet. So test, fail, learn is the only way to use Twitter. You must be reactive to it. You have to be on it all day long. And truthfully, the old fashioned
not built to do it.
They're not built
ready,
to
fire,
do it.
Aim, not looking.
And they also don't make any money with the amount of talent
Can't
required, the amount of humans required to adjust, or the amount of tools you'd need to model to have a machine learning algorithm of any kind do that adjustment, if it's even possible. It doesn't exist. And so
this is what's so frustrating, Shelley. You're going to flight school and you've got a bunch of agencies with broken wings. And why are those wings broken? Because of their cultures.
Yeah.
That's why they're in a war on talent and they're losing. And that's why they're not keeping up with all of the creative advancements you're seeing at Twitter, which Stacey and Sarah are telling us
about.
So,
Sarah, what do you think Twitter needs to do? And I know you don't want to, be nasty to the agencies that are useless, and most of them are. You know who you are, agencies who are useless. Some are great, and they know who they are, too. We know who they are, too. But brands are more and more frustrated. And in a world where media mix is so critical, and Twitter does provide an amazing awareness platform, and whether you get the transactional part right or not, you'll get there. But right now, I need awareness. I got television. I have a little bit of reach extension through display on the internet and possibly radio or audio or podcast you can advertise here. But mostly, Twitter's amazing for an awareness extender, reach extender. But I can't do it if I can't do it. So what do you want to say to the brands and the agencies right now? Like, what is this path? Because it's bumpy and there's a lot of entrenched organizations and a lot of old school methodologies. None of them are moving the business forward. None.
To be successful today and really have an intimate relationship with consumers, with people, I do think you have to be extremely agile and very nimble. You need to be able to listen to what the conversations around your brand are being had. You need to understand what is culturally being prevailed inside of both our platform and well beyond. You need to be able to be very clear around who you are as a brand, what your voice is, what your purpose is, authentically connect that through not just your messaging and your creative as a brand and as a business, but all the way through to the best practices that you have as a company in and of itself. Your employee practices need to be connected to who and what you are saying as a brand more publicly in the world. And when consumers find out that those things are actually in conflict with each other, now because of the closeness and the proximity with which Twitter brings you to your user base and to your consumer base, you will get called out if you do not live those things. And so as a result, it's not agency versus client or one versus the other. It's actually the entirety of the ecosystem coming together and realizing that we need to move faster. We need to listen more. We need to be able to respond in real time to what people are yearning for. And with that, you have things that can feel really heavy and solely connected to like very brand purpose driven topics. But you take a brand like No Names brand in Canada, No Names Brand is this. If you have not followed it, you need to follow it. It is absolutely awesome. It is a brand that has yellow packaging and it has black bold type in a very like almost generic like font or typography. And it has existed for years and years and years in Canada. And the brand, the products are literally like Square Cracker is their version of a saltine that you would find in the US. And there's a series of products in this. They had never been on Twitter before. Their agency and client came to us and they said, you know what? We actually feel like we could better leverage your platform. So we sat down with them. We did a 3-hour workshop and we said, this is what your tone of voice is like, very deadpan. It is, it's just very pragmatic. And through that, they launched in January on the platform. Their follower base grew exponentially. They have now seen this entire rebound in terms of their own cultural relevancy inside of the country. And a great example of that, when they were curating the, they were watching the award show, the brand was watching the Oscars. And instead of saying, like, describing someone's dress with lots of froofy language, they just wrote sequin dress. For someone that was in a sequin dress. And they wrote big hair for a gal that had like large hair. So these are the things that you can be fun, you can be flexible, you can have humor, you can have creativity, you can be a person. We are all people and human at the core, and brands more and more and businesses more and more are human and real and authentic. And that's what we're trying to do, is to break down those barriers that used to exist in the world of traditional media and now are totally possible based on interest and intimacy coming together on Twitter.
What would people be surprised most to know about Twitter? The thing that you know that so many people that are listening to our podcast just for some reason don't.
The thing I would want people to know most about Twitter is probably not just one thing. First thing would be it's people. That every single place I go around the world, I've been in 20 countries over the last 12 months. Every single person and employee of this company believes in the mission and believes in caring more for our customers. And we define our customers as everyone from brand advertisers and small businesses to agencies, as well as to the people who use the platform every single day. And there is like a real genuine commitment there. The second thing I would say is we don't have it perfect. I think we acknowledge that. And we are tackling like really hard, complex problems, especially around like safety and security of platforms today. And this is why we're really clear about what our mission is, but also really clear about where we're going to invest our time, where we're going to invest our resources in order to make sure that the aspiration we have of serving the public conversation and making people feel safe and secure and making sure that people can come to this platform and find fun, flexible conversations to be a part of, that vision is realized. And that the reason I wake up every single day is I feel like I get to work with people that want to tackle that journey.
Amazing. That was a great answer to that question.
Great answer for that question.
You are so smart. You know, they never should have let you on this podcast. Just you're so good. It's like Michael Jordan. You don't even think about the fact that
you're just pumping me up because it's the end.
Michael Jordan dunks and he's like, oh, I didn't even realize I dunked. I just saw it go in. I don't even know. So, Shelly, you gave me an idea earlier in the episode when you were talking about your coronavirus airplane experience.
You were thinking, were you else?
I was, and it's almost time for my favorite day of the year, April Fool's Day. Yeah. We're almost there.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've got what I'm going to do.
What are you going to do?
I'm making swag, not for my agency, but for agencies that I believe are full of shit.
Really?
Yeah.
Like special swag for those special agencies that just don't quite get it right.
Right. So can you imagine walking into the airport and you go to your terminal and everyone's waiting to get on the flight to Los Angeles or San Francisco or Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bunch of media people.
Sure.
And they're all wearing these protective surgical masks, but they're unbranded until now. Now you'll walk in and see them all wearing WPP surgical masks or Publicis surgical masks.
But those masks don't do anything.
Exactly.
Oh, no.
Don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating at Apple Podcasts, a quick comment or review, and thank you for downloading and subscribing to Think About This with Shelly Palmer and Ross Martin. If you think you know less than you did before,
Just wait until our next episode on the Westwood One Podcast Network.